Kia ora koutou katoa. Welcome, everyone. I'll begin by handing over to Dr. Bloomfield for a health update, and then I'll share a few updates from the government this morning.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Kia ora koutou katoa. Today we're reporting no new cases of COVID-19. This means New Zealand's confirmed and probable COVID-19 total cases remains at 1,497, and of these, 1,147 are confirmed. We now have 1,398 people who are reported as having recovered from COVID-19. This is an increase of 12 on yesterday, and 93% of our cases are now considered recovered. Today there are just two people receiving hospital level care in Middlemore and North Shore hospitals, and neither is in ICU. There are also no additional deaths to report today, and we still have the 16 significant clusters, four of which are now closed, and a number of which have not had any cases between 14 and 28 days, so they are on their way to being closed off as well. Yesterday, our laboratories processed 2,893 tests, bringing the total number of tests completed to date to 197,084. And I actually was on a Zoom call earlier on today with one of our primary health organisations and a number of GPs down in the southern DHB area to thank them for the work they have been doing. That particular area, they've taken over 10,000 swabs, and the effort that goes into for each clinical person to dress up in PPE, to do the swab, to ensure the paperwork is done properly, to get it to the lab, and then the lab staff as well. So every one of those nearly 200,000 swabs, which have been a pillar of our efforts and to support us going into alert level two, has been work on a number of people, and I just want to again acknowledge that work. In terms of hospital visits under alert level two, an update on that, and obviously our highest priority as we go into alert level two is to continue to protect visitors, patients and staff, while of course enabling those very important human interactions that are so essential, especially when someone is unwell. On the ground, visits are managed by district health boards, and there will be flexibility on the part of individual clinicians and or managers of services. But the general principle will be in our high-risk areas, which include ED, intensive care and maternity, it will be one visitor still and one visit per day, while in other parts of the hospital, still one visitor at a time, but more than one person is able to visit during the day. As I say, there will be flexibility on the part of hospital staff in response to individual circumstances as well. I do encourage people to just check also with the hospital around visiting hours, because obviously those visits will need to occur during the usual visiting hours. And be mindful when you go of those core public health principles of distancing by 2 metres, hand hygiene, and of course do not visit if you are unwell. In terms of the Section 70 order, I've just issued an updated, an amended order, which will be available later today on the Ministry of Health's website. And this order specifically allows people to enter businesses to prepare for the move to Alert Level 2 on Thursday. And finally, today is International Day of the Nurse, and in 2020, it is part of an International Year of the Nurse and an International Year of the Midwife as well. So we are celebrating our nurses now more than ever. It's very clear that having a good, strong, well-trained nursing workforce improves health outcomes for individuals, our whānau and communities. And every day, nurses have played a critical role as part of our COVID response over the last few months, in addition to the work they do routinely providing fantastic care for New Zealanders. And I'm sure all of New Zealand will join me in thanking our nurses today, and indeed every day. Kia kaha, kia mai, kia mana wanui. Thank you, Prime Minister.
Kia ora, Ashley. Can I just reiterate the comments made by Dr. Bloomfield about our nurses? And I have to say, even before COVID-19, I received quite a few letters where people who have been through our public health system really want to acknowledge the workforce within our system. And I often will get a message saying how kind, how professional, how supportive our nursing workforce and our clinical workforce are within our public health system. I don't often get a chance to pass on that feedback, but today seems like the day to do it. Can I also acknowledge that we have a huge nursing workforce trained in New Zealand, working abroad, and who are doing the hard yards through this pandemic as well. And we want to acknowledge all of the Jennies all around the world. Earlier today, the government announced the biggest ever increase in funding for district health boards, as well as additional funding to support DHBs to deliver more services, more surgeries, more procedures, radiology scans and specialist appointments to help clear the COVID-19 backlog. We're investing over $4 billion more into our health system because the lesson from COVID is that we need to be prepared and that a strong health response is the best way to protect jobs and, of course, ultimately be in a position to get our economy moving again as well. We never know when the next virus or health emergency is going to come, but when it arrives, we know that it pays to have a world-class health system in place to deal with it. In fact, that is a commitment we should be making all the time to New Zealanders. When we were elected, we did inherit a health system that did have a number of long-term challenges, not the least of which was some years of underfunding, and public health had experienced that acutely, but also issues with infrastructure and facilities. Over our two previous budgets, we've made a number of investments in health and health capital, and as part of rebuilding together, our budget steps that investment up even further. Alongside our announcement of increased funding for PharmAc on Sunday, it is clear that our rebuilding together budget will also ensure that our health system is resourced to get us through and offer even more care and support to New Zealanders. The strength of our health response means also that we're able to get to level two and move our economy into a phase where it's opening up again even quicker. Central to this is helping our small businesses get up and on their feet and supporting them as they look to operate from Thursday for many. To assist with their recovery, the first tax refunds in our $3 billion tax package have been paid, with cash flowing into the hands of businesses. To date, 676 businesses have applied for refunds and payments worth more than $62 million. This package announced last month is the largest support package to business via the tax system in modern history. Today, I can also confirm that the Small Business Cash Flow Loan Scheme is officially open. In just a couple of weeks, IRD officials built a new system to process applications for loans that will be interest-free if repaid in the first year. These will be a source of working capital for businesses, helping with things like fixed costs like rent. The scheme went live last night and is able to receive applications from today. Payments will be made within 5 days of a loan being approved. So whether you're a sole trader wanting to borrow, for instance, up to $11,800 interest-free, or you employ 50 FT staff and want to borrow up to $100,000 interest-free, go online to the Inland Revenue site and you'll find all the details there. And finally, our wage subsidy scheme has now paid out $10.7 billion to 1.75 million New Zealanders. That ultimately is what it has taken to make sure that we keep those people employed to their place of work, and so they can be at the ready when their businesses open back up. Finally, on public transport, with more people returning to work under level two, I do just want to make a bit of comment on public transport and people getting to and from work. You remember when we talked about the Alert Level 2 framework, I really encouraged employees to have conversations with their employers around whether or not they'll continue working from home or whether they'll be coming into their place of work. And I really want to encourage those conversations to be had, to discuss whether or not there are options around flexible starting and flexible finishing times to perhaps space out necessary commutes. I imagine some workforces will be looking to lock in the productivity gains that were made while people were working from home, and that's one way that they can do that. I know there's some good guidance that will be issued, but in summary, plan your trip, keep your distance, and that will be required on public transport, and of course, track your journey as well. And as always, if you are sick, stay at home. I would encourage patience across the board, though, particularly in those first few days of level two. As we have with every level, it will probably take a period of adjustment, particularly as people work out the best time to travel on routes that allow distancing. Apparently, I've seen a bit of commentary overnight and this morning from businesses and people about how they're preparing for the next stage of life. And I'd sum up what I've seen basically with Kiwi businesses and Kiwis just getting on with it. Cadrona Ski Field, for an example, is getting ready for skiers to hit the slopes in late June and working with the government on standards to set up zones around areas where groups may come together, like near chairlifts, planning for a domestic market and ensuring that they've got really strong contact tracing in place. A Wellington hairdresser is doubly pleased she can reopen on Thursday and has made it this far without needing to make any of her team redundant because of the wage subsidy. Others have written to me about catching up with their wider families, conscious about those small gatherings and keeping it small, and I have to say that's something I'm looking forward to as well. All right, we're ready to take questions.
Under level two, how do you justify allowing 100 people to go to the movies but not to a funeral?
Again, the whole definition is whether or not you're coming together to be with others. And there are circumstances where people just aren't in the same space in order to mix and mingle. And that's the risky behaviour. Look back again on the areas where New Zealand has had trouble with COVID. It's been weddings, it's been bars, it's been social gatherings. And so that's where we've put the limits in place.
Socially distance at funerals as well, and they've waited until level two. Bodies and morgues waiting until level two to be able to properly mourn and grieve, and all the indications you gave last week were that they'd be able to do that, and then yesterday saying it's going to be capped at 10. Do you recognise how much of a blow that is to those grieving families?
I have always said through all of this that the thing that I have found as a human the hardest in all of this has been funerals and tangihana. I've known people who have lost very close family members, and I can't imagine trying to grieve through a global pandemic for a loved one without being able to be together with others. But the one thing I also know is that funerals and tangi are a place where you want to comfort people. It is your natural instinct. That's why we come together. And the idea that we would force people to not be able to comfort one another, to support one another, is equally a very, very hard thing to comprehend.
Decision for themselves.
Equally, we're doing the same for every area where these are natural life events. We've made the same hard call for weddings, funerals, any gathering of note. You know, I spoke to someone last week who turned 100 and had no gathering. This is across the board. We know this is causing pain, but we equally have tried to be really consistent, not see a situation where people really question why they can't come together and others can't. But this has been very hard.
Is now saying that you could have a wake after a funeral in a hall with 100 people as long as they're properly socially distanced. Your cabinet doesn't even understand the rules.
No, you've heard me clearly outline them. This is only intended, we hope, to be a very, very short period that we're asking New Zealanders to unfortunately stay with us on what is a very difficult thing to do. But the intention is it will get us there faster to when people can come together again. Again, this is all based on the advice of health. And you can imagine I feel a real obligation to make sure that that we're listening to that advice. So perhaps this is something I can also ask the Director General to comment on.
Well, thank you, Prime Minister. Again, we look very carefully at the sorts of activities that were higher risk as we go into Alert Level 2 with the intention of making sure we are keeping people safe, we are maintaining the gains we have made, and with a clear expectation and obligation on us to provide additional advice to government in 2 weeks' time about increasing the numbers up, and that's what is expected and intended.
Did you consider making an exemption for tangi and funeral?
Yeah, we did think about whether or not there was a way to do things differently. And again, as I look around, I think we can see that actually everyone struggled with this globally. But probably what people have otherwise also seen is that there have been outbreaks as a result of funerals around the world too. But yes, we did think about it, and it was just a very, very difficult thing to find a way where you'd have carved out exemptions for specific areas that are very similar to other kinds of gatherings. And ultimately, we want to protect people.
What about church services? Not necessarily funerals or weddings. Churches are saying that they are, you know, willing to enact social distancing. And you can go to a movie with 50 people, but you can't go to a church service.
And we did have good discussion around that as well. You know, ultimately, some of the feedback that we had from those even within church community was that actually it is a place for fellowship. It is a place for community to come together. And if we were building rules that said ultimately we were trying to stop people on large scales interacting with one another closely, then that is where that fell into that same category. If you think about it very simply about whether or not you're going into a place where you know other people and are likely to congregate with them, that's really where that line falls. And that's why we've used evenly across the board the rule of 10.
The Attorney General suggested that there was a case for religious gathering even under level 3.
Sorry, what was that?
The Attorney General suggested there was a case for religious gatherings under level 3 because there's a restriction on religious freedom, kind of broader issue here. But now we're going to level 2 and there's still this restriction. Are you worried about that?
No, because as you'll find, also equally they're weighing up the issue of health against that as well. What I would say is, you know, this is something that I personally... gave good, strong consideration to. You know, this is in my background as well. I was brought up in a family that practiced its faith religiously, and so I did think about this a lot, and it's something that has weighed on my mind. But equally, there in Australia, you see similar guidelines and rules in other parts of the world, all for the same reason, because it's all based on evidence.
How many of the compassionate cases to visit the dying have now been approved?
Now, I'm sorry, I haven't got that information with me, but I will. We'll provide that on our website later on, or we can get it to you later.
Would you describe contact tracing or our capacity now as gold standard?
Yes, I would, and I think the latest data, and we're getting more each week from our public health units, and so we're aggregating that over the last 2 or 3 weeks, suggests that the key indicator, which is that identifying and isolating close contacts within 48 hours, at least 80% of them, we are achieving that. And furthermore, we are continuing to increase our capacity out in our public health units to be able to do more and more. Currently at 185 cases per day, and we're targeting the number of 500 over the next 6 weeks.
Prime Minister, you said yesterday that you were comfortable with the support being provided to migrants in New Zealand who had been affected by COVID-19. How does that tally with the news that a family of 7 was given a handful of tins of beans and spaghetti, a few other small goods, and told that they were meant to make that last for about 2 weeks of lockdown?
I am comfortable with the support being provided where that support is being provided as we would expect, and that does not meet my expectations. $27 million was put into making sure that those services on the ground who knew where the need was had the flexibility to provide both food and support for accommodation to house people if they needed that as well. Whilst I can't comment on the specifics, I do understand that locally the team is trying to get in touch with the family in question because what they've had reported to them doesn't meet their expectations either.
We heard from another woman, another migrant, a pregnant woman, who when she asked the local civil defence group for help was told, we can get a food parcel to you in 5 working days and that will be all you get, a one-off because of the demand. Again, you know, not talking about the particulars, but in principle, wouldn't it make more sense to deliver direct cash support like a benefit as we do for other New Zealanders in difficult situations?
Yeah, and again, that doesn't meet my expectations either. As you've heard me just say, we did support directly on the ground with over $20 million provided on top of what already was available to those community organisations to beef up what they were able to do as quickly as possible. So not only did we have local civil defence playing that role at a local level, and they delivered thousands and thousands of food parcels and support, we also, of course, had NGOs. We also had Whānau Ora playing an incredible role delivering packs to families as well. So we were really looking to mobilise those support networks that could get food out the fastest or other forms of support, and we gave them the flexibility to do that as well.
Why aren't you treating these stranded migrants people in the same way that you were treating other people in need who happen to be residents?
The difference? Well, of course, there's a difference through our work and income legal framework, just quite simply how they're treated when it comes to our benefits system. And that is the reason why someone, when they have a visa into New Zealand or applying for one, are required to demonstrate that they have the ability to provide themselves with a level of support should they ever need it. Now, of course, these circumstances are extraordinary, and we wouldn't expect that necessarily to hold for a long period where someone is deprived of work or in the situation we've seen with lockdown, which is why we look to provide local support that wasn't just food but had the flexibility for accommodation and any other essential needs that group may have had. Yeah.
As we've seen, as you'd be well aware, in other countries, the easing of restrictions has resulted in flare-ups. What are you both most concerned about at level two? What will be keeping you up at night?
Yeah, and flare-ups are a concern. Second waves are a concern. And you see, you know, I start my day reading the international news, and we've seen coverage, obviously, of Germany. In the past, we've seen the coverage in Singapore. More recent days, a bit of discussion, perhaps to a lesser degree, but around patterns in South Korea. Of course, we worry about that, and that's why we're making sure that we've prioritised trying to get people back into work, get their incomes flowing again, but also that we manage the risk. And that has meant some hard decisions, but hopefully ones that are balanced and look after as many Kiwis as possible.
The tourist leaders who spoke at the committee this morning were saying they need clarity on the wage subsidy now. They can't wait till Thursday. What assurances can you give them that help is on the way?
You will have heard me say yesterday very clearly there will be additional support for business, particularly affected by the ongoing alert framework, and who are struggling to operate at full strength under a COVID environment. And so I've also pointed to the budget, but to tourism specifically, I'd say not only did a survey from the tourism industry suggest that over 80% were accessing the wage subsidy already, we also have looked at specific redeployment support to get their workforce into other opportunities. And you will see a tourism sector package delivered from this government as well.
Was in terms of the language you used talking about our borders, saying that our borders would be closed for some time yet, has scared off a lot of people from booking flights and things like that for next year. Can you offer any other assurance, I guess, to those people of when they may be able to start getting people from overseas?
Yeah, I mean, of course, I want New Zealanders to be able to move freely as soon as we can safely do that, and I want those from overseas to be able to be in a position to safely come and experience New Zealand's hospitality again. But what we're having to prioritise at the moment is the ability of people domestically within New Zealand to work, play and experience New Zealand as freely as they can. And that does mean, for now, having to keep restrictions at our border. The trade-off would have been lift border restrictions and us all live with restrictions in our day-to-day lives. I acknowledge that as a trade-off, but what I hope we can do for tourism is get domestic tourism moving and also be in a position, as soon as we're able, to at least get the Australian market moving too.
Do you regret not letting stores, DIY stores like Bunnings, stay open for the wider public during lockdown now that they're closing stores? People will be wanting that sort of material.
Well, of course, at level three, I saw that the likes of Bunnings were opening click and collect shop options. Many of them, of course, have trade windows where they're able to, where they were able to operate in that way. So that was something that they were able to adapt to. Of course, online purchasing as well was able to open up at that level too.
That's Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern. We also heard from Director General Ashley Bloomfield. Just on that, I just tried to order one drill bit from my local hardware store, and they told me there was a 3-working day wait. It's very frustrating.